be.
Yes, welcome, welcome.
When that robot voice comes in, you know it's time to begin. Wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening.
ELC.
I did a thing and I messed it all up. Especially
if you're wrong about geeks in fangs. Blah, blah, using this podcast to power you through your Halloween hunts. We're going to be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week,
delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons over at patreon.com/DLCpod, our lovely, wonderful, supportive patrons. Make sure the show continues. It is through their generosity and support that we are here. If you would like to be one of them, check it out, patreon.com/DLCpod. You'll get cool stuff. You'll get the video version of the show, which is super fun, on demand. You'll get ad-free audio episodes, which is pretty rad. You'll get bonus content if you go up a tier. You'll get our Wednesday show, which we call paid DLC. It's fun. Myself, Christian, oftentimes Lana Bashinsky joins us. It's a laugh riot. People enjoy it. And we're doing an entire extra bonus show right now. Christian Spicer and Alex Solman are doing Feeling This, which you also get at being as for being a patron at any tier. So much content. It pays for itself. Don't ask me how. It's a trick and a treat. DLC, of course, the show all about games and their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, spelled with two N's and one T, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host
slash nemesis,
the guy who's going to a rock show right after this, I promise. It's the Spice Man!
Rock on this Halloween episode of DLC with my thoughts on rock band DLC. I'm still playing Guitar Hero, DJ Hero.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
We're losing all the heroes.
We're literally losing.
I'm eating a hero.
The problem with Christian is that he does not only a costume, but he'll do the voice also for the is this how the Spice Man looks? This is the Spice Man's I don't know.
No, you idiot. This is Halloween.
Oh, okay.
I'm in a costume. Are you stupid? My gosh.
Wow. Oh, Spice Man.
You really this is a Halloween costume. I'm dressed up like a rock star. I am a video game critic and analyst.
Well, that's our show, everybody. Good night.
90 plus minutes in your ear hole.
No, not 90 plus minutes in your ear holes. I'm so happy to be here.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween. Rarely do we do a show Halloween Eve, and that is released on Halloween. So we had to juice it up a little bit. Christian, are you, this is not going to be your actual Halloween costume, I'm told.
No, this is just an in-the-box costume that I've had for years. I told you already that it used to be I was just a rock star, and now yeah. I am an aging rock star. As I
aging rock star with the voice.
But I got my bling. I got my dimes, my nice. Gloves, my
oh, man.
Bojangles.
You got your reality TV show. Everything that goes along with that outfit, right? No?
Yeah.
All right. We do, despite everything you've heard up to this point, we do have an awesome show about video games for you coming right up. We got lots to talk about. There's so many games to talk about right now. There are games I didn't even have time to talk about last week that I want to talk about. It's just this tornado of games, and it's going to be a fun episode. We have an awesome guest with us as well, although not entirely sure he's sticking around based on the beginning of the show. We'll see if we'll be here. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata. And your downloadable Christian. But this week, once again, DLC stands for deciding where you lean as you continue. Because from the Point in Progress podcast, our friend Mario Rivera is back with us. Hey, Mario.
Hello. I don't even know how to top that. That was so loud and awesome. And
well, it was loud. You're right. It was loud.
It was loud.
Yeah. Once in my life. And you know what? That does not compare. You did a fantastic job.
Yeah. That's I don't know if we earned awesome, but it was loud.
It was loud.
It was loud.
How's it going, everybody?
It's going. This is Halloween. We got lots to get to, guys. Let's just jump right in and start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. That's also where you can send any comments or questions you may have, any way you would like to communicate with us. That's where you do it, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. And we love hearing from you. Even better, or equally as good, I should say, is visiting one of our communities. You can go to the Discord, DLC, excuse me, it's 5x5 DLC, 5x5 DLC on Discord. It's also 5x5.reddit, excuse me, 5x5 DLC. What is it? When did I lose my brain? It's 5x5dlc.reddit.com. That's where you can go to hang out with us. But where you can submit stories and talk, and there's great people there. Not me. I'm barely hanging on, you can tell. But that's where you do it. But Mario, you are a guest. Save me from myself. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Well, the recent news of my personal friend, Henry Cavill, of course, is no longer going to be in the Witcher series. And I think that, to me, hurt a lot of people. And so I would love to talk about that first.
Yes. Witcher news. We thought we had gotten all of the Witcher news that was going to happen in 2022. We had already drunk from the fire hose of Witcher news, just a torrent of Witcher video games announced, sequels. No, the Witcher news wasn't done. The Witcher was done when the Witcher says he's done, or when they won't hire you back to be more Witcher.
When season 3 wraps, you know, it's like one of the two.
Yeah. So we heard this week, as Mario indicated, that there will be a season 4 of the Witcher TV series on Netflix. But the titular Witcher will be recast. Henry Cavill no longer playing Geralt of Rivia. Liam Hemsworth. We're getting a Hemsworth in there. Liam Hemsworth taking on the role of Geralt.
Arguably one of the best Hemsworths that was in Expendables 3.
That's true. Know? Of all the Hemsworths in that movie, he certainly is worth the hem. This is not all of the Witcher news this week. We also found out that the OG Witcher, the first Witcher, is being remade in Unreal Engine 5, and that is going to coincide with the game's 15th anniversary of the original game's release. At least the announcement coincided with that. It's in the early stages of development. It's being worked on by Fool's Theory, which is a Polish development studio. It is going to be, because it's going to be an Unreal Engine 5, it's going to be visually, I think, on par, at least they proclaim it will be on par, with those upcoming announced Witcher games that are coming in the next few years. We don't know when this will happen, but most people, myself included, fell in love with the Witcher series with Witcher 2. The first Witcher game, it wasn't really what put CD Projekt Red on the map, but maybe this remake will be cool. Obviously, Mario, because of the way you brought up this story, you're much more interested in the TV show's changes. Are you a fan of the Netflix series?
I would say generally I am when it comes in. It's sort of like an event every winter, like the last couple of years where it's been around. Mostly just because I feel like Henry Cavill really embodied the character of Geralt and really gave it a personality and character that the games actually personally for me didn't connect with. So when obviously the news popped when The Witcher first came out, and then the game sales exploded. That was definitely re-engaged my interest in the, you know, The Witcher property. And so for him to no longer be a part of it definitely feels like it's, I don't know how well that sits right with me, especially when it feels like such a drastic change in character or placement, as much as characters have been replaced for God on forever, you know?
Sure.
But ultimately there is just something pretty crazy about this one, because Henry is a known fan of the books and of the video games. He is a true gamer, as most people would say.
Yeah.
But I will say, though, I am very excited for his next project happening, which of course, hey, I'll take it. Okay. Like, I'll take a Superman movie any day.
Yeah. That's, well, this is the rumor, is that those were mutually exclusive castings. Like, for whatever reason, the return to Superman made it impossible for him to continue as The Witcher. We don't know that that's the case, but there's been some speculation there just because of these two announcements sort of on top of each other. And yes, noted actual video game fan, builder of PCs, flexor of muscles, wooer of women. But also, my understanding is this Liam Hemsworth, big fan of the series too, or at least in the statement released with his casting announcement.
I mean, what would his statement say? Well, I find the game series and book series to be terrible.
Yeah,
I will do my best to bring this role to life.
I think that is exactly the announcement when I don't know. I couldn't think of the guy who played Mario in the live action Mario movie.
Oh, Chris Pratt.
No.
Bob Hoskins.
That was Bob Hoskins' original statement. Was, while I find this material dreadful, I shall do my best to elevate it.
Yeah,
it would have been a funnier joke if I could have remembered his name.
Which I did see a tweet. There was like a combination of multiple stories, and one of the stories was Henry Cavill will be able to do, you know, The Witcher forever as long as they stick to his one rule, and this one rule was to stay true to the books and games. And then an article came out basically like saying that the writers are not too fond of them. And so, hey, I guess maybe that might lead to something. But yeah, I'll give season four a shot.
Yeah.
If it doesn't hold on to me, then I'm willing. That's fine. It's not like to me, like The Witcher's not a character like Doctor Who, for instance, where I feel like it's going to be like all of a sudden a new revival.
Right.
But at the same time, I'll still give something, you know, a shot, you know?
Yeah. It's an odd thing. I'm struggling to think of things like this in a TV setting where literally the main character of the show is recast four seasons in. I'm having a hard time. I mean, there's, you know, there's side characters. There's the, you know, the mom on that sitcom, or the, you know, the crazy neighbor over here or whatever.
Are you calling Aunt Viv a side character? I will not have that. Aunt Viv.
Yeah, there's
the star.
I didn't watch
A Fresh
that
Prince
show.
Of Bel-Air starring Aunt Viv.
I was too old. I didn't watch that show. But no. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't the titular character. It wasn't the Fresh Prince was now being played, you know, by somebody else. It wasn't.
Could you imagine if they did that to Rosanna and the Connors? Like, that'd be wild.
Oh, yeah. Right. I guess Rosanna is the exception. Well, Rosanna was just, we're not doing, Rosanna doesn't exist anymore.
And she's dead.
Yeah. But if like, if the Fresh Prince was suddenly played by Young MC or something. I don't know.
I got that reference.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Just in yellow, she says hello. What about this remake, Christian? Are we excited about a remake of the first Witcher game in Unreal Engine 5? I feel like at least this is a game that will benefit from looking a lot prettier. I don't know if the game itself needs to stay as you know, as true to the original. It's not like a bunch of people are going to be like, oh, I fondly remember that first Witcher game. It doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, I'd love it if the announcement said, like, we're making the story of The Witcher 1, which honestly I do not remember. I'm almost certain I did not roll credits in Witcher 1. I don't think I played more than 5 hours of it. And that was probably after I liked The Witcher 2. You know, like, ooh, this is good. There's another one. Oh, I don't like this. But it's like, for Resident Evil 4, fans are like, I hope they stick to kind of what makes that series what it is. And for The Witcher 1 remake, I'd be like, I hope they make it like Witcher 3. That's just me personally. But I also like thinking the reason that Henry Cavill left was because they were like, we're going to do your likeness in the game. And he was like, that'll be $100 million. And they were like, we're going to do this Hemsworth's likeness in the game. I feel like this is, and who knows when these are coming out, you know, this was one of the code names of the games they talked about before in their big CD Projekt Redathon. But I feel like this is perhaps the, hey, we need to figure out Unreal Engine 5. What's a title we can do that on? Kind of like we talked about Naughty Dog doing some remakes to get some more experience on the PlayStation 5 hardware, and what better way to use some devs that haven't played in those tools or systems than to
It's not being done internally by CD Projekt Red, right? They're farming this out to Fool's Theory, which is a different studio. Fool's Theory has worked on Divinity Original Sin 2, Baldur's Gate 3 as support studio,
right?
Not as a main studio. So I don't know if that is necessarily the case, because it feels like, oh, they're using other folks for that, for this one.
Yeah. I don't know what their contract is, like what learnings or what shared tech or, you know, bolt-ons that they add to Unreal 5 to make it happen. But the fact that we got that Unreal 5 Matrix demo, whatever that was, last year, and we still haven't really seen a lot of Unreal Engine 5 games come out, I feel like this is a ways away, Mario. I think we might get Superman before we get The Witcher 1.
Don't tempt me. I'll say I think this will be ways away. I'm putting this obviously in the same category as the Resident Evil remakes, as sort of like possible reimagined, but also very true to the original source material. Kind of what Bloober Team's doing with Silent Hill 2. Just taking a property that everyone is now falling in love with and trying to give that same respect that, you know, I think that it's worth. And honestly, as long as they do a better job of explaining the story other than the beginning of Witcher 3, which was just pick your adventure, and then the person tells you what happened. So definitely I'm excited to see those aspects of the story more fleshed out. So that does actually gives to me more credence for me to play it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to read too much into this, because I think this could be a really cool project, and CD project, in fact. But all of this sort of recent Witcher news strikes me as being, potentially just a scream of desperation, you know? Hey, we put a lot of eggs in that cyberpunk basket, and that turned out to be a real backfire, you know? That didn't pan out exactly how we wanted. So let's go back to the well that we know yields water, you know, it bears fruit that well, to mix my metaphors. And so let's announce, you know, 4 Witcher games in the next 6 years. Plus this other, we got more Witcher. What other Witchers do we have? We have Witchers lying around. Ooh, yeah, that first one. Let's remake it. You know, it feels like people love Witchers. Let's give them as many Witchers as we can. That's, and maybe I'm being unfair. It's possible I'm being unfair, because I think this is a legitimately cool notion of remaking a game that a lot of people haven't played, or a lot of people that love The Witcher haven't played. But all of this Witcher news just feels like, man, they're really reminding everyone that they made The Witcher and The Witcher was real good, and there's more Witcher coming. Don't worry, guys, more Witcher's coming.
Well, that's what I think is interesting. They're not only making a lot of Witcher and reminding people that they think The Witcher is good, but it's really The Witcher 3. And the Witcher 3 expansion that people love. Witcher 2.
I loved Witcher 2. I loved The Witcher 2.
But it's a very different game. It's a for better or worse, far less mainstream game, far less cultural phenomenon style game. And if people are like, oh, they're remaking Witcher 1, maybe I'll just go back and play it now. You know, like, let me see what, I don't know. But I'm curious to see what comes of it, but it definitely is a whole lot of Witcher, whereas there's no second season of Edge Runners. They seem to have scaled back what Cyberpunk 2077's DLC is going to be and what those plans were. It does feel like a pretty hard pivot back to the franchise that people still like a lot.
It sucks for me though, because I think Edge Runners was actually the thing that got me back into the world of Cyberpunk, and honestly I played it early on during the PS5, so at that time it wasn't running as bad. It's still pretty bad, but it wasn't running as bad as everyone else was getting, so I feel like no one really got a chance to have that experience. But then Edge Runners comes out, and now it's like, oh, people are sort of appreciating Cyberpunk, and I wanted to go full bore, but now we have to focus now on good old Geralt of Rivia.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I want these games to be great. I don't want to be cynical about it. It just seems like an awful lot of Witcher news. And it's a bummer. It's a bummer that where we started with this, it's a bummer that Henry Cavill's not playing the character anymore. Although, I have to admit, I didn't watch much of that show. I'll be honest. I watched a few episodes of season one and I didn't stick with it. So,
I mean, I think it's exciting in that aspect if it works, right? If it's still good and fans of the show are still fans of the show, I think it's exciting to be able to hand that casting off. I've talked about before how I like in comic books where, yeah, continuity is great, but I also just like stories about these characters. And I could read a compelling arc where Peter's 18, and then I can read a compelling arc when Peter's 25, and then give me another arc when he's 18 again. Just kind of like, who is this story?
I don't think that's what's going to happen here. I feel like they're going to be, it's going to like.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Not going to acknowledge it at all. He's just going to keep on being Witcher. It's like, he's got white hair. He's fine. Muscles. Don't think about it.
Yeah, age difference, don't worry about it. It's totally fine. But yeah, that's actually my fear for the show, at least when season three be a resolution of some sort, and then we go back and like sort of the prehistory of this. Like, I'm curious, but I doubt it. Like I said, I think it's going to be.
It would be cool. I think that if they do handle it that way, I think that's the smartest way they can handle it.
So smart.
But
I mean, spoilers for early season one. Yennefer totally changes the way she looks. Like, this isn't a universe that doesn't allow for total transformations of how people look. So
as long as he grows a beard, because the current Geralt does not grow a beard, then I'm like, all right, cool. Now he's different. Understandable.
Still Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise still doesn't let him do that. That's just a...
they should just handle it like House of the Dragon handled it, where it's just like, we're not mentioning the fact that there's different actors now. You figure it out.
Is Yennefer the same? Yes. Everyone else? I don't know. You deal with it.
You deal with it. You know, and you know what? One character's just not going to age.
Yeah.
So there.
Yeah, the X-Men series did it. So there you go.
All right, Christian, what is your story of the week?
My story of the week is there's a lot of good stuff that came out of this Phil Spencer Wall Street Journal interview was kind of where a lot of it came out. And we eventually got the whole thing posted. But it started off as me being right in my prediction that Game Pass is going to have to raise prices. Yes, I predicted they'd do it this year. And yeah, he said they weren't going to do it this year. But he said they're going to maybe have to do that. So just know for the record.
So you're wrong, is what you're saying. No, that counts. Wildly inaccurate.
No, I nailed it. That counts as a perfect 100% track record. But also we got some juicy stuff from Game Pass. We've been getting some juicy stuff because of this Activision merger where we're getting like install bases and, you know, Microsoft sitting there saying like, no, we can't be a monopoly. Sony is kicking our butts. Like, look how much they've sold. And now we're getting some insight into Game Pass's numbers and its subscriber base. And one of the things that came out of that conversation was the idea that Microsoft has, quote, failed, air quote, to hit their Game Pass subscriber target for executive compensation goals. This isn't, you know, who knows what their like bare minimum is, but that kind of, this is the thing. If we do this, we all get gold Ferraris, you know, we got to get Game Pass. I mean, they already have gold Ferraris, but, you know, this
only
is, this
in
is
Forza Horizon.
Yeah. I sent you a total sidebar. I sent you that picture, right, of that car. There's a car that I often walk by that parks like on the grass in front of their house. And it's totally how I park every car in Forza Horizon. I love it. And it's like it doesn't matter. Sidebar. But this idea that Xbox isn't hitting its Game Pass targets and Phil's comment of, you know, at some point, everyone who owns a console has made up their mind if they're going to subscribe or not. And I think this is fascinating. And Mario, I think my question to you, one, general thoughts, but two, out of this, do you see Game Pass going to a place where games are only available on Game Pass? Whereas like Netflix, if I want to watch Stranger Things, I need a Netflix subscription. I can't buy the season on iTunes. If I want to play Halo Infinite or Forza Horizon, I don't have to have Game Pass. Do you think we'll get to a point where it's only on Game Pass and not available standalone?
I don't know. As we start moving towards the future of diskless consoles and being more connected to the internet, I do have to, and I've said this before, I think even on this show, I have to pull back from that thought because I how many people that exist without the internet as their main thing that guards, you know, their entertainment. But at the same time, I still think that there's still a propel forward of Game Pass being available on multiple platforms other than just the Xbox. I think that very much so how it's able to prove that I could play it on a Steam Deck is the same way that I feel like it could be on a television, same way that it can be on a small box that's cheaper than the system that you could possibly sell. You know, I think there's definitely avenues where you can access this thing. I personally wish that since, you know, rest in peace Stadia, that they are able to do the Stadia promise of being able to connect it to, say, a YouTube video that I was watching, and then all of a sudden I'm in the game. That never came to pass. I just wish that maybe with the store of some sort, like, it just allows me to, hey, stream the game immediately right now on Game Pass. We have the access. Like, boom.
It never came to pass, but you're hoping it comes to pass?
That's right. That's absolutely correct.
I just want to clarify a little bit of the of what was announced in this report. Christian, you correctly noted that they have fallen short of their target for growth. This is the second year running where evidently they have fallen short of their target. According to this article, this is reported by Axios, by the way, based on a financial filing that Microsoft put out. Their target growth for 2022 for Game Pass was 72.8% growth rate for the fiscal year that ended June 30th, 2022. What they achieved was, now, their target was 72.8%. They achieved 28%. That's real, real bad. That's really, that's not great.
That's ambitious target is all it is. You know, that's just...
I mean, listen, anyone who's ever listened to this show before at any given week in the last 5 years knows that we are massive fans of Game Pass. I'm not here to slag on Game Pass. I think Game Pass is the best deal in gaming by a wide margin right now.
I would say our Patreon is probably better, but after that.
Yes, of course. Yeah, in gaming, our Patreon, yes, but in gaming... but yes, no, there's no reason why I can imagine anybody would not want to have Game Pass if you play video games and have a PC or an Xbox. It's just ridiculously good value for your money. And yet they're having a harder time getting people invested in it. And I wonder if we're going to see a big change when something like Starfield comes out. Like, Starfield was supposed to be coming out in a couple of weeks, right? I imagine that would juice those numbers quite a bit. If you have these massive games that are coming to Game Pass that are exclusives, you get those exclusives on there. And
that was my question to Mario, though. Like, it's not exclusive. It's also available boxed or, you know, standalone download, right? Like, it's not you. Yes, Game Pass is the cheapest way to have access to that game for a month, but it is not the only way to have access to that game. You can pony up $70 and play it on your PC or on your Xbox.
Right, but or you can pay 10. You know, that's
and
another
rent
thing
it for
is
a month.
It's wild to me that Microsoft is making the calculus that we'd rather you spend $10 to play Starfield than 70. That's wild to me because they would sell millions of copies at 70, right? They would.
Well, they're hoping that you subscribe and find the joy in it. Also, forget you've subscribed to it.
Sure, yes. Seven months.
The key there.
7 months later, you've spent 70, right? But and hopefully that you're continuing to do that, and they'll continue to have those exclusives. But the calculus to me is hard to wrap my head around. You know, and it just in that, like, we're giving up. You know, I guess it's we're giving up short term games for long term gains. But I think you're going to see the uptick in this this growth rate when those huge games come out. It's just Halo really hasn't been that for them. And what else is there that's super, you know, super gotta have it? The value is incredible, but I don't think people are like, oh, Plague Tale, Requiem. You know what I mean? Like, that's, I think there's going to be those games like those Bethesda games that are going to start doing that for them, and it's going to change things in a big, big way.
Well, I definitely also want to say, picking off of the big acquisitions that have been going on for the last few years, setting up that groundwork, well, then we'll definitely have a future, hopefully, for Game Pass for the future of Xbox.
Yeah.
Coming out with a Fable, coming out with Avowed, coming up with, obviously, these other titles that they have in the bank there, as well as a new Halo, a new Gears of War. Personally, I would love maybe a console-exclusive Splinter Cell game. Just please. That's the place where we fell in love with it. Please put it on that platform.
Yeah.
But obviously, the other thing could be partnering up with other companies, say like Ubisoft, and adding them to the subscriptions, similar in the way that they do with EA. You have, if you do Ultimate, you also get included the EA All Access. And I think that would be an interesting play as well, especially if this possibly increases the price down the road.
Which none of this is to say that Xbox Game Pass is doing poorly. Xbox gaming generated $16.28 billion for Microsoft this year.
What a low number.
Yeah. And PC Game Pass is doing very, very well. 159% year-over-year growth of subscriptions. So, you know, I think the notion here is that they're struggling. I just think it's wild to think that they were going to have a 72.8 growth rate and they only had 28%.
I did read, and I'm not Googling to double check this, but I did read that was like their internal executive bonus growth rate style. Like, that's the ambitious, we got to be firing on all cylinders. This is what we're going to go. Not the, you know, if we don't hit this, we shut it down. Again, like you said, it's profitable in terms of how Xbox financials go. Gaming was a plus and an otherwise not as many pluses. And I also think defining things as growth rates is also tricky, just in this, it's like, and I think Phil Spencer kind of hinted to this where, you know, if you have, and I know they don't, but if they had a 90% attach rate to Game Pass and console owner, their growth rate is going to be real bad, you know, for the next quarter. But what I was looking up, what is Game Pass's big game this year? There have been a lot of great games, and I'm not trying to downplay any of the great games that we've talked about on this show, but in terms of like, you know, big, I don't think there was one this year. Like Halo and Forza were last year.
Yeah. Well, that was going to be Starfield, right? Which is why you got to respect on a certain level the willingness to delay that game or sign off on a delay, because it's a huge hit. It's a huge hit on every level to that company. To not put that out on Game Pass this year, but the way you phrased that question, Christian, which is, are you going to have Game Pass at a certain point to be able to play these games? I think that is a really interesting question.
I think I wonder Netflix if there will be games
that you just can't get any other way. That's going to be interesting. I don't know if they're willing to do that yet. Certainly not. But it also seems weird to say, hey, we're not going to take your extra $60, you know.
Well, I can't do it with Netflix. Like, you know, I wanted to watch Better Call Saul, and my options were like subscribe to AMC Plus or get some live over the air service. And AMC Plus, I did a free trial and I didn't enjoy the app. So I went to iTunes or whatever, Apple TV, and bought the season. I made that calculus of like, oh, this season is $25. That's how I will consume it. But I can't do, I want to watch Players. I think it's right up my alley. I don't want to watch it bad enough to add another. I've hit my subscription overload. But if Players was available to buy as a season, I would have done it. And so I think that people are locking things behind snubs.
1 month of Paramount Plus is going to be way less than buying the season of any show would be. And you'd be able to watch all of Players in a weekend.
I know, but it's that mental load of like, how many subs do I have? When do I cancel? How long I've been carrying this subscription? I don't know. It's a different calculus for me, and maybe I'm alone in that. But I think there's a reason why these streaming services do it that way. Because why wouldn't it? Is that on Peacock, Paramount? I don't know. Why wouldn't Paramount want my $50 or $40 and sell it to me a la carte? They've made that calculus that it's not. That's not the way to do it. They'd rather roll the dice and take my $5 sub or whatever, right?
That's correct. Yeah, that is correct. It is interesting to see some of this information come out that we probably wouldn't have had access to or we wouldn't be privy to were it not for some of these big, court filings and big mergers and acquisitions. It's interesting stuff. All right. Speaking of growth. My goodness. My story of the week is the news that Steam has hit another milestone. This is fascinating to me because I'm old enough to remember when PC gaming was dead, everybody. Remember that? Remember when PC gaming was dead? Steam hit 30 million concurrent users this week. Now, to put that into context, that's more than the populations of all 50 US states, excluding California. So more people were on Steam at the same time than live in any state in the union other than California. You'd need to gather everyone from the 16 most populous cities in the United States in order to reach 30 million. So the 16 biggest cities in the country, bring all those people together. All of those people are playing Steam at the same time in the same weekend. That's a lot of people. 30 million people.
Could you imagine if they all went to vote?
Wouldn't that be something? Hey,
well, the problem is
they
do go to vote, but they're in the biggest cities and not in the land masses have no.
Yeah,
but that's a different podcast.
Please vote. Yeah, so evidently, SteamDB, which is the database that tracks a lot of this stuff, says that of those 30 million, only 10 million. We're actually playing games at that time. People were just logged into Steam concurrently, doing other stuff, browsing, idling, doing other stuff, which is,
scrolling through all of the games they own to be like, God, what game do I
feeling
play?
The guilt, buying things they'll never play because it's on sale.
Don't even get me started on that.
$6 off. I got to buy it now.
Witcher 1, the original's on sale. Better buy that before
they'll never remake
comes.
That game. I would think a lot of folks hearing that would say, "Well, that reduces the impact of the 30 million dollar number." I say the nay. I say just because only 10 million were actually actively playing games at that peak doesn't take anything away from it because Steam seems to be an integral part of those 30 million people's lives. You have Steam open while you're doing other stuff. Steam is part of your life. I think it proves the same thing, which is it's ubiquitous, it's important, and a heck of a lot of people are using the platform. Back in 2021, November 2021, 27 million people were concurrently. So 3 million increase since that peak. And Steam isn't the only way to play PC games. As is noted in this article, Epic Game Store, all kinds of other ways to just play a PC game on your PC. And yet 30 million people were logged into Steam at the same time. Mario, that's huge, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. In terms of it being, the one place where you need to update your games as well. So you always have to have that running out in the background.
But
in terms of obviously the peak of some of the games that have launched over the last couple of weeks are in prime, review season. So for games actually releasing, yeah, this makes sense. Call of Duty is big. Gotham Knights is another one. And then, for everyone just to have it on their systems, I think it's almost like an essential software.
Well, Call of Duty had its biggest Steam launch ever.
Yeah.
It was that game alone had over 238,000 concurrent players. The highest peak ever on Steam for a Call of Duty game was back in Black Ops 3, which only had 63,000. So 63,000 to 238,000. That's massive uptick in people playing Modern Warfare on Steam. And that game is also still available on Battle.net and other places. So, obviously on consoles as well, right? And yet it's just crushing on Steam right now. So you're totally right, Mario. I think it's a massive indicator of how big PC gaming is, how big it is right in this particular moment in time. And like I said, I'm old enough to remember when PC gaming was dead because it was all consoles all the time. And we are as far from that as we could possibly be at this point.
What blows my mind also is I wasn't on Steam that weekend. So that's one more, they could have had.
They did put a little big asterisk on here.
Yeah.
If you go all the way to the bottom of the article, it has in teeny tiny print in the bottom margin, it says, not Christian Spicer.
Yeah. So imagine if I was logged on. I mean, it would have been the highest ever, you know, like even one higher than this one. So
they would have got 31.
You really dropped the ball on this one, Christian.
Yeah, really I was right. The ball. I mean, it was a busy weekend.
Yeah, the opportunity to be part of a history, and you, what were you doing? Not being part of history. That's what you were doing.
We had a flash Christian's mob on Epic Game Store.
Christian was on cool. Epic Game Store. Yeah, that's the problem. He's like, where's everybody? No one's returning my DMs.
Oh, man.
Anyway. All right. Let's get to the games that we have been playing, because there are a lot of them. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, NordVPN. Do you use a VPN? You should be using a VPN. No matter what you do online, you need security. And while you have that security, you're going to want performance. You're going to want speed. You're going to want reliability. A reliable VPN. NordVPN. Whether you have never used one before or whether you've tried a few, NordVPN has all the features, all the flexibility, all the friendliness that you could want out of a VPN. I've been using NordVPN for quite a while myself. You don't have to be a power user to do it. If that's something that's turned you off in the past of feeling intimidated by a VPN, it's so simple. Whether you are on your computer, on your phone, on your tablet, whatever the way that you are accessing the internet, NordVPN makes it simple. They have apps for Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. You sign in, you click, and then you're good to go. And one account, a single NordVPN account, is good for up to 6 different devices. A lot of people use a VPN for watching movies or TV that are from a different region, because you can convince the service that you're in that region. And NordVPN makes that so simple. Even if you're just watching TV in the US from a service here in the US, NordVPN encrypts all your traffic so that your ISP can't throttle your bandwidth based on content type. And if you're worried about what happens if the connection to NordVPN suddenly drops, you don't need to worry. NordVPN has an automatic kill switch that blocks your device from accessing the web while it's unprotected. Take your peace of mind back and use the web with the freedom and security of NordVPN. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/DLC. You'll get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, and you'll get 4 months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's NordVPN, NordVPN.com/DLC for 4 months free and a huge discount. Check it out. All right. Let us talk about the game, do the playlist. Let's do it.
Ooh, what you playing this week? You can tell us.
Mario, it looks like you might have the same addiction I have right now. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah, I feel the snap. I've been feeling the snap for quite a while.
Yeah. Dude, it's not good. It's not good for my life.
No.
It is not. It's not. It's real bad for me. It's real bad. I don't know how it is for you, but it's real bad for me.
Jeff?
Yeah.
Let me see your hands. Where's your iPad
nothing.
Now?
What? No. No.
Jeff?
Nope.
Jeff?
Nope.
Come on. Mario, what are you doing? Eyes up here. No. Oh, no. Put the phone down. Put the phone down. He's playing while looking right at me.
I have not installed. I have not installed Marvel Snap on my phone, specifically because if I installed it on my phone, it would be the worst thing I could possibly do. I would never not be playing it.
Found out it was on this, I was game changer.
All right, so tell me, are you you're playing a lot Marvel Snap? You're playing it a lot?
Yes, I am. I'm terrible at it, but you know what? I persevere. I have a pretty decent collection level, just a rank level, real bad. Can't get out of the 30s.
Oh, right? Really? Yeah, I'm at 46 right now. I'm mid gold, which I feel pretty okay about, but I feel like I can get to platinum. I feel like I platinum's right there for the taking, and I really, really want it. That's my only gripe is that because I actually care about my ranking, I am less inclined to try some really wacky decks, which is what I want to do. I'll see somebody play a deck against me, and I'm like, ooh, I want to try that crazy multiple man movement, add a Hulkbuster armor to multiple man, and then move it from location to location and just keep dropping multiple man everywhere. I want to try that deck, but I'm like, I'm not going to risk losing a bunch to kind of narrow in on how cool this deck can be and how I can use it. I'm going to stick with my tried and true because there's no other mode for me to just sort of like mess around and not lose a bunch of ranks.
Yeah, no, that's me. I'm actually getting very used to the retreat button because when I know yeah. that it is not in my cards, I'm willing to take like the small loss, like with just a little bit to my rank versus like actually yeah. being overconfident and hitting the snap, losing 8 levels. Yeah, yeah, I've learned my lesson. You know, not knowing what that button did for a while, by the way, it wasn't really clear. So all of a sudden my levels kept dropping. I was like, oh, that's why you don't do that early yeah. on. You yeah. don't become an early snap guy.
Yeah, you play those early snap guys and you're like, you don't, you're not, you know yeah. what you're doing yeah. there. Early yeah, snap guy. Yeah. You know, you're right. It is, it's interesting. I wonder if they're going to kind of build that in. I like now the simplicity of like, it's one mode. I'm not picking who I'm playing against. It's just shoveling. Sometimes I'm playing against a bot. Sometimes I'm playing against a human. I don't really know. I'm having a good time either way. I'm moving up. I'm unlocking things. I'm moving forward.
A lab would be nice, right?
Yes.
Just even, and you can pick like easy, medium, hard style opponent. So you can go in and just play with some of these cards. Yeah. But it's one thing to read it. And kudos to this game for making most of the cards, you know, one line or less, two lines or less. Like sometimes some CCGs, yeah. you look at it and it's like, on the fifth yeah. Fortnite,
right.
don't,
and there's a cloud in the sky.
Don't get me started on Yu-Gi-Oh! Yu-Gi-Oh! Now is paragraphs deep. It's like Edgar Allan Poe just poem on them now. It's ridiculous.
The pitcher's ERA is below 2 on a Wednesday and a midweek
score
game.
And 7 cards ago.
God.
Yeah. And Snap is very streamlined in that regard, but I would still like to see like, oh, how does this work if this does this on flip and I have this that lets me do my on flip twice and keep it powered and this, that, and the other, and see them happen, I think really reinforces that play style. I feel like something like that has to be coming to the game at some point, right?
Yeah. I will yeah, say, I guess, though, that, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I don't know if, I mean, a lab would be fine. I would prefer just like a mode where I'm not going up or down in rank, a mode where I want to play against a human being, but it's just like quick matchy kind of fun times, no risk. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Mario.
No, for sure. I absolutely would like for just a, but I noticed that it's funny because the times that I play the game the most is when I don't have something to do. And that's specifically when I'm completing challenges or battle pass. I'm just playing just to play. And that's dangerous for my rank, but I love the game for that. And I think that's actually a sign of a great game. The fact that even though I, you know, winning or losing, I'm having a good time regardless. I think a lot of that is contributed to the land placements that are random throughout every match. Mm-hmm. These literally spice up everything really nicely. And they end up making some really interesting games. I had the other day, they had the Sinister Bar as a place, and I've done some wacky things with that, and I've also done some stupid things with that. yeah. Specifically, Deathlock. Don't Deathlock that land. It's not funny.
Just kills all the other cards. Yeah. That's funny. It probably has Deathlock and then kills the previous Deathlock that it
yes.
spawned.
Yes, it does. It does a crescendo to there's only one Deathlock.
Hilarious. So. I agree. I think that as much as, Christian, you're constantly asking me like, are you feeling those hooks get into you, like to buy more, to spend more? Is it mobile gaming you hard? And honestly, I mean, I feel about it like I used to feel about Heroes of the Storm, which is I will spend money because I am enjoying this experience so much. I haven't really spent money. I mean, I spent $4 right at the beginning. That's all I've spent so far. But I suspect I will spend more at some point, probably, because the hours of enjoyment are there. And you're totally right, Mario. Every time I play it, I'm having a good time. I'm enjoying the process of playing it. I am not just playing it. I think the worst mobile games are when whatever that progression hook is mm-hmm. the joy is, oh man, I just want to see the next thing. That's not how I feel at all. It's cool when I unlock a new card, but that's not why I'm playing. I'm not playing to get to the next place, to get to the next, not even get to the next rank. I'm excited about trying to get up to the next rank, but I'm having a good time beating people in a match. Like just the single match that I'm in with my deck, I am enjoying making those decisions, trying to do it to the best of my ability and outplay the person in front of me.
This is the best case scenario of one more game, because yeah. I don't want to stop. I like someone in the chat even said, like, I stay up late nights just like, you know what? All right, this is just one more game. I just want to see how this combination of deck works. Oh, that yeah. worked really well. Let me try it again and again and again. And then yeah. you start unlocking things. And then, yeah, and then it starts becoming a problem. Quick question to both of you. Have either of you done physical card games before, like Magic the Gathering or anything like that?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, I have.
And those are, you know, time sinks in terms of money, I think, way more by buying individual packs in the similar way how Hearthstone used to do.
Yes.
I do find it refreshing that the cards that I am unlocking are naturally in terms of the progression of the game. But then the money that I'm spending is the battle pass is like the cost of maybe 2 or 3 packs a month.
Yeah.
And I still find that still refreshing. I'm curious how the longevity of this season or this additional things that are going to happen every month and like the next card box or pack that ends up coming in, like how I'm going to feel about it. But for yeah. now, I'm gearing up for PvP because I think that's going to be the one where I can play with my friends. I can play with you, Jeff. I can play with my friends. Immediately, I already thought of I'm going to do the point in progress tournament of champions the moment that unlocks. So definitely everyone's invited if you want to come.
Yeah, they have specifically said that they are working on, you know, friend battles or
yeah.
you know, choose to play this exact person kind of situation.
I want to destroy Greg Miller. That's all I want to
do. Yeah. I mean, it is going to be interesting to see how they manage to continue that progression because it's pretty brilliant that they've managed to sidestep one of the things that's just never fun, which is opening a pack or getting new cards and having them be duplicates, right? That's never fun. Even in Hearthstone, where you could like trash your cards and dust them and turn them into resources that you can spend on the card you actually want, which was a good, you know, good tactic for easing that pain of getting the duplicate, but it never completely eliminated it. It just was like, oh, well, this will be, you know, 1/50th my way to getting the card I want. It still doesn't feel that great. Yeah, it's not nothing, but it's so next to nothing that it didn't feel great. And so the fact that they just have completely gotten rid of that entire notion is a pretty big accomplishment, I think. But it does beg the question, how can they maintain that constant upward climb of new things? And the answer is it becomes exponentially longer to get to the next card. But again, I'm not playing it to get more cards. I'm really not. I'm having a really good time. And maybe that's just where I am in the ranks. You know, maybe getting in the upper echelons, you really need specific cards, but I'm having a great time with it.
I wonder, two quick points. One, to this point, I wonder if kind of in the name of the game, and they use it a different way right now, because you are not buying cards with real money, if they Thanos snap the game and you snap, you know, all your cards are gone. Oopsie, world event. You still have your rank. You know, all this stuff that you still have unlocked. But like, I think there's creative stuff they can do that's not me coming over to your house and ripping up your favorite Pokemon card and being like, that one doesn't work anymore. That I think could be creative. And then I see you, Mario. But the last comment is, I think what Marvel Snap has done really well is what I would call the serialized TV show versus movie approach, where it's just short enough to make you think that you always have time for one. And because of that, you play several. Whereas so many other games, it's like, well, I don't have time to play. I don't have time to watch a movie. That'll be 2 hours cut to 3 episodes of an hour long TV show later. And you're like, that was easy. And I think Marvel Snap nails that balance really well. Mario, how did I made you angry? I'm sorry.
You didn't make me angry. I did want to point out that's straight up from a Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime. It's the straight up ripping of the cards and throwing them into water. Anyways, it doesn't matter. In terms of like the progression of like the way that we build up our cards in terms of holographics and light, like different effects and stuff like that, that I'm actually really enjoying, for them to just like snap that away scares me a little bit.
Well, maybe they, ain't maybe they keep
it's
that.
It's a terrible idea, Christian. I'm sorry. It's never going to happen. And that's a terrible idea. Yes.
Because I'm spending all my time getting, I just learned what the, after the shiny logo looks like. And then it's, I learned all the new stuff. No, the cards can look really cool. So
have you split your card into a new card yet? After you get what? The infinite level or whatever, it goes, you can split off your card into its own variant. And I split off my Ant-Man into its own holographic variant. I'm like, what? It becomes an entirely new card.
I saw that with Hawk. It was like, oh my God, Neff Hawkeye. And it looked incredible. The background just reflected. There's so many things that they have done to my serotonin levels by showing off and just these wild little things that they've done to the game, that if that was taken away from me, whoa, I was like, no. It's like when I opened up a card pack at a card shop and I got the cool Mewtwo, and then all of a sudden you steal my bike. That's a real story, by the way. That happened a long time ago. But anyways, still, no. But otherwise, I'm excited to see what different things that they could change and amped up. I personally would like same characters, different abilities. But I think that might break the game too much. Maybe that's going to be a very future thing. But you know, they still have so many more people in the canon that they could about. So I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, I don't care about variants. I don't care about these pixelated. And then I saw the Alex Maleev Jessica Jones variant. I was like, how much money is it?
Literally today, because it's today, I saved the $1,400 just like, I'm going to buy the cool, you know, the nice ones. And then I got Baby Wolverine, and I was like, I'm buying that. That's going to be it. Next day, Alex Maleev's Jessica Jones. I'm like, you son of a... Ooh, give me Chris Omni cards. I want Chris Omni cards so badly.
Yeah. There's a number of things I wish the game would do. I wish they'd let you stack your variants in your view so you could... You just look at the card. You have to look at, you know, three different copies of the same card in your giant parade of cards. That feels like a no-brainer that they should add in. I wish the feature where it's animated. It's like, you're not allowed to call it animated if it just kind of ripples a little bit. That's not animated. Come on. I want like Punisher's gun to be shooting, you know? I want animated. I don't want, there's a tiny ripple of, faint ripple in the background. It's like, it's not.
Yeah. That's not Spider-Woman Carnage version, like her hair moves. It looks kind of cool. But I agree with you.
Yeah. Some of the stuff looks cool, but animated, it's not animated.
By the way, those voice things, that like frame break. Yeah. If I can get DLC packs for that and I can get a Jeff Kanata saying frame break, that'd be dope. I'm not gonna lie. That'd
pretty good. Frame break. This just sounds goofy. Frame break. I mean, we could literally talk about Marvel Snap for the rest of the show.
Frame.
Who broke the frame?
My frame's all broke.
Did I do that? Grandma voice unlocked. Who broke the frame? Is this Duke animated? All right. As long as it's not the Spiceman, nobody wants that.
I mean, you say that, but like deep down inside, you would pay them money to turn that off. So I think
that's right. I could literally talk about Marvel Snap for the next 2 hours, but we won't.
Challenge accepted.
What else have you been playing? What's on your playlist, Mario?
I was one of the early on got the chance to play Ghostbusters Spirits Within. I got to play with a few friends, which was it's the way to play personally. But I've mentioned before that I'm a huge fan of these sort of like horror games / like asymmetrical multiplayer games where it is one versus four of the players. That stems all the way back from when I was playing Spies versus Mercs on Splinter Cell way back in the day. And I think that this is just no different. Have either of you gotten a chance to play this game yet?
Christian, you did.
I put a good amount of time into the game. It's so well made. The care for the IP is handled so well. I think what I said on the show, or I guess to summarize it, like it does this 4v1 so very well, but it also is still totally just that game. You know, like,
yes,
there's a little bit of upgrading, a little bit of this or that, that it does really well. But if you've not been into that style of game, like there's story in between things, but it stinks as a solo, not stinks, but it's not ideal to play solo. But all of that aside, Who Buddy is it fun when you can, you know, get five friends together and go to town?
The synergy of being able to grab the ghost with the proton pack, have someone throw down the trap, and then call it right when you get the ghost is just magnifique. I absolutely adore when I played my friend Nanobiologist. The game is fun. This is Illphonic's third iteration of these, where, of course, they did Friday the 13th. They did the Predator Hunting Grounds. And this is their best one yet, in my opinion, in terms of quality, in terms of them having the combinations of what you can do with the different Ghostbusters when facing ghosts, playing as a ghost character and actually making that, I think, fun and compelling, in a mix of sort of like a prop hunt slash sort of like in a way that like Dead by Daylight stun certain things. I think that they do a really good job. I find the story to be, it's more in the lines of like Extreme Ghostbusters or the real Ghostbusters cartoon, which I'll take for it because, hey, I'll get more Ghostbusters. I believe this story was written by the Williams, who, they've done their research, they've done their lore. I love how much they're interconnected with the current continuity of Ghostbusters, as well as just, playing around with things. Yeah, I'm all in. I just need more people to play with. So if anyone else wants to play, just let me know. I really, really love this game.
That's awesome. Yeah. I feel like I'd be all over this game, but I there's so many things right now to play.
Just too many things. Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like you would say there are. Sometimes I like to pause and let people fill it in their heads. That is Ghostbusters Spirits Within?
Unleashed. Spirits Unleashed.
Oh, excuse me. Oh,
what am I saying? There's something else called Spirits Within. My bad. That was
Spirits Within is a Final Fantasy movie, right?
That's right.
True. Yeah. Spirits Unleashed. Don't the Ghostbusters want to leash them, though? That's the whole point, is leashing them. Don't unleash them.
But they've been unleashed.
Them. I'm saying the Ghostbusters should leash them, Christian.
Who broke my frame? Was it a ghost? Go leash them.
Keep your ghost on a leash, Buster. See what I did?
You haven't cleaned up level. After your ghost the last five times it slimed here.
All right. What else is on your playlist there, Mario?
The last thing I did want to mention, pretty much because I think I was one of the last people that got their invitation to finally pick up the Steam Deck before the next week it was just available for everybody. And so I want to feel special for just like 10 seconds. But ultimately, the game that I've been playing a lot on this has actually been the Yakuza series, specifically Yakuza 0, which is a series I love. I actually played the first one not that long ago when it was the Kiwami version for PS4. And this is sort of the prequel of that said game. And it's all the same wackiness and fun, but really, the fact that I can now take it on the go and be able to experience it anywhere is what makes that game, I think, shine a little bit more. Just the sort of goofy open world experiences. And yeah, I've now had the Steam Deck for at least three weeks at this point, and it's definitely changed the way that I've been wanting to play games in certain aspects of being both a console and a portable console.
Yeah.
I don't even call it a console. I just call it my computer. It's my laptop now.
Wow.
Like, it's definitely changed that aspect of how I want to consume and do things personally.
You're like, just give me the TPS reports from your computer. This plays Yakuza. That's awesome. No, I totally agree. Although I got to say, here's this mm-hmm. may be a quirk of me, but I want to run it by you two fine fellas who also own Steam Decks. The magic promise of the Steam Deck, and it's not just a promise, it's the truth, but the magic promise of the Steam Deck is play the grandest, greatest things, play your Uncharted's, play your whatever, Yakuza, for example, play anything, play whatever in your Steam library on the Steam Deck, play the biggest, baddest PC game, play your Witcher 3s, your Skyrims, whatever you want, play it on the Steam Deck on the go. And that's amazing. And it's true. You can. It's great. However, I find myself, and I may be the only one of the three of us, but I find myself thinking about specific Steam Deck games that generally aren't those huge, big, grand experience games. Like, it's cool that I can do it. I never do it because it uses up the battery much faster. It just feels like not the way I want to play these grand experiences. I want them on a big screen, a bigger screen. I like the idea of finding these more indie games. There's such a deep bench of Steam titles that I tend to find like the the Cursed Golf or the Cult of the Lamb, or there's millions of great Steam games.
Drifter, just like all these older titles that have been around for a while, and now you get to experience it on a certain platform. And that's been my experience personally. It's been going back into, I actually have, God, I hate that I have to say this, over like 400 or 500 games on Steam, but that's only because I collected them through Humble Bundle or some other source, and I've accrued this library that I didn't have access to until the last several years when I've built a PC. And even when I built my PC, I didn't play them. But now I feel like the Steam Deck has given me a better excuse of experiencing it in the way that I feel like that it does tend to be in the lifestyle that I am, where I work pretty long hours outside of the house. I have 1 hour lunch break. What can I fit in that 1 hour? A couple levels of Doom Eternal, a couple levels of, I was playing Yakuza in there, which somebody was watching me play. That's a fun experience. Just have anyone look at a screen of Yakuza and not understand what's happening. But
you are playing like the AAA stuff, because I find myself not doing that. And maybe I'm just a weirdo that I'm not.
So,
yeah,
the fact that you bring that up is the fact that it's dockable. And so I bought the one of the peripherals that, of course, that they recommend. And I plug that into my television when I feel like, yes, this is the time that I want to sort of experience those on a bigger screen. Are there certain instances where this didn't work really well? Very much so. But there are the smaller instances where I wanted to play Multiverses, and it ran beautifully. Mm. I Bluetooth a Xbox controller, and then I was playing as one of the gremlins, just having fun. So there are definitely moments where I'm like, it has the promise of what I feel like the Switch gave us 5 years ago.
Right.
And definitely finally made it more modern
in
terms of being played. It's like before we began recording the show, I was playing the beginning of Death Stranding pretty much because I wanted to see what that looked like on the portable system. And it's a very gorgeous game. It runs very beautifully on a small device.
See, before we were recording this, I was playing Marvel Snap.
I gotta wean myself up sometimes.
Christian, am I the outlier here? Am I the only person that sort of feels like I just shy away from the big AAA stuff on the Steam Deck?
I mean, I don't think you're an outlier in terms of how a lot of people use their device, but I mean, on last week's show, I talked about how great I thought it was for Uncharted, especially as a replay for Uncharted on that device for me. I think it was your first time playing it. Yeah, I'd recommend if you have a 4K screen and a little more powerful device that's probably the way to play it. But I think there's no shade meant here, Jeff, but like you're not leaving the house a ton. So you have access to your super ultra wide and these other ways to engage with these style of games I think you would prefer. And for a lot of other folks, or some folks at least, they are out and about a lot, and it does give them this option to jump in and jump out of these bigger games. But I think also much the way that the Switch is a great device for these indie games, the Steam Deck is that without needing to wait a year for them to come out. And it's that sleep wake function, that pick up and play and all of that stuff that does make the device so right for those style of games. So I totally agree with you there. But I think like Mario said, some of these bigger games, especially ones that are a few years older, run really, really well on the deck and look great on that screen. And I think Sleep Wake also works really well for those types of games. I mean, I talked about on this show that I rebought Elden Ring on Steam after originally buying it on PlayStation to have it on my Steam Deck because I wanted to engage with it that way of just pick up, play. I got 5 minutes, I got 10 minutes, I'm going to go grind for a little bit and put it down. And that was actually a better way for me to experience that game and be in that world than I'm at my computer. I'll be playing, 2 hours and a lot of frustration of Elden Ring.
Yeah.
See, I'm afraid to play that on the go because I will throw that thing if I ever get angry. But I also love the fact that the cloud saving is actually really good in terms of being able to play on the go and then switch immediately to my my PC or switching out to another option. And then Game Pass as well has opened up a lot of the possibility there, specifically being able to play like Fortnite pretty decently on there. The other big thing, and I can only say a little of it, I got to play older games, very fun old games, in a way that I haven't experienced them before. That's all I'll say. And that has, to me, been the biggest, like, oh my God, I need, this is the thing in my life that now has opened me up to so many endless possibilities.
Yeah.
That, I'm excited for more people to finally have that option, because I was actually guilted into buying this thing, and now I love this thing.
What Mario is saying is that the Steam Deck is an excellent emulation device.
Sure.
I'll be the one to say it. I've said it before. It is an excellent emulation device, and there are wonderful games to experience.
Emudeck.com. I don't think there's anything bad about pointing people to that.
Emulation. It's amazing. We talk about it a lot on the show.
It's so simple and slick.
Super easy.
Christian Spicer, what is on your playlist?
Let's start with a game that I will most likely be talking about again at the end of the year. Ollie Ollie World's last big DLC is out, Flow Zone. I love Ollie Ollie World.
Starring the progressive mascot Flo.
Yes. It's like you're John Hamm and you're trying to date her. I watch all of the commercials. I'm very up to progressive. Yeah, clearly,
commercials have been going just as long as like General Hospital at this point. Like they have progressed that long.
It's baseball playoffs. This is the most commercials I've seen.
Sports. Sports will do it. Yeah.
Ollie Ollie World is a game that I love dearly, and I think if you haven't picked it up yet, you really should. I truly think it is one of the best games that has come out in 2022, and the DLC Void Riders and now Flow Zone are incredible. And what I find so incredible about them is that they are additive in a way that doesn't make the base game feel lacking. I think a lot of times you get DLC in games and it's like, without it, the story didn't make sense, or oh, they've been saving this mechanic for this thing, and now it's that you can't go back to the original levels and they feel dated or whatever. The original levels are still fantastic. The level design in the original game or the base game is fantastic. And then the tweaks they add for Void Riders is just like this kind of aha moment of like, oh, there's new things on the levels, and now I'm doing this thing that I've already been doing, but this is how I progress, and it feels fun and fresh and additive. And same with Flow Zone, where the biggest change to it now are these gusts of wind, these comical big gusts of wind that you see on screen. And if they're at your back, they give you a big boost. And so a lot of times you're jumping into, you can't see what's coming up, which is thrilling in a game like Ollie Ollie World, where, what type of, if you're going for a high score or min-maxing your score to trying to pull off a certain trick, how much time do you have? Are you going to go high or low? Do you want to get on the more difficult route? Like, what's ahead of you? But the way these levels are designed is so exquisite. It's thrilling, but always fair. You never feel cheap. It's like, oh, I missed it because I couldn't see what I was going to land on. That's awesome when the wind's behind you. Sometimes the wind is below you. And that is the most similar to Void Riders in terms of the gravity well that would pull you up. But it suddenly makes chunks of levels vertical in a way that they weren't before. But I think what's most refreshing about this Flow Zone DLC is when you have headwind, because it will straight up turn you back around. And the game had that a little bit already with quarter pipes that would, you'd hit and you'd go back the other way. But oftentimes in the base game, when you do that, you'd go back just for a little bit and then start going down on a new route. But in the levels that I've seen in Flow Zone so far that feel so fresh, is that it turns around and then you're on a different part of the level that you didn't see before because of where you hit it. And so it's not just doing the same things, but backwards. You're coming at this new challenge, this new part of the environment in a way that you weren't prepared or expecting. But if you go and replay the level, you see it, right? Like that other avenue is there. You just didn't process it your first time through because you're focusing on what's ahead of you. And also, which I think really awesome about this DLC is that it's a whole new map. Like, I really liked Void Riders. I talked about Void Riders, I think, a good chunk on this show as well. And the Void Riders levels are interspersed in the main game's map. It's like, oh, you have this icon now, and you can do the Void Rider version of it. In Flow Zone, you're whisked away in like an airship. It feels reminiscent to other games that have overworld maps and airships, let's say, and you're taken up into the clouds, and that really goes a long way in terms of making it feel new and fresh, because you're exploring this whole new area, seeing this new map and having this new adventure. It's exquisite. And I think if you're put off by it because it's a skateboarding game, or, you know, you don't have the dexterity to be able to pull something off like this, if you like 2D platformers, Ollie Ollie World, in my opinion, stands up there with the best of them of all time. And I think what makes it truly masterful are A, its level design, and B, its ability to be approachable to just clear a level, but devilishly tricky to do all the little achievements if you want to. It's that sweet spot of, like, even in Flow Zone, you're getting map fragments to get to the next thing. And rarely does it feel like you need to sit there and, I got to perfect this level to get the next map piece because I need 7 to unlock the thing. It's like, if you complete the level, you'll get one. You know, like, you can have that. They keep your progress going smoothly. But you know there's 2 more in there, and you saw them. You kind of want to go get them. How am I going to get there? And it changes the level, and you have to rethink. The level design is exquisite. The progress that you're allowed as a player through the levels, I can't recommend enough. Ollie Ollie World and both expansions are wonderful, wonderful, and all worth your time and money.
Very, very cool. What else have you been playing?
And if I didn't say, I was provided a code for that. All of those. I think I said that. I've said it each other time. The other big one that I want to talk about that is new this week that I can talk about now is Bayonetta 3. Mario, I don't know if you're a Bayonetta guy.
I love me some Bayonetta.
You're in with the witch. Good. Jeff, I do not believe that you are a big Bayonetta person. It's never been a franchise that has grabbed you.
Correct.
It blows my mind that Bayonetta now is a Nintendo franchise, like Switch. Switch has the trilogy. And yes, I know Bayonetta 2 is Wii U, and it's been on, but Bayonetta has always felt like a franchise kind of without a home to me, because I think it was first a PS3 and Xbox 360 game, and
yes,
people liked it, but then it set the world on fire, and then 2 came to Wii U, and it's like, oh, this action, you know, this action game is incredible. They're doing what they do. Platinum's doing what they do, and it's perfect. And oh, there's this, the first one, you can play that now also. And then they ported that to Switch, and more people got to play it. And Bayonetta 3, I texted you this, Jeff. Bayonetta, between it was announced and now when it came out, kids have started and graduated high school.
Yeah.
Which is wild to think about. Like, a whole high school's done, you know, right, between like announce and release. So you're a freshman in high school, like, that's gonna be a great game. Now you're in college and you don't care about it anymore.
That scares me. Did you know that Switch?
Did you know that it has been longer since Beyond Good and Evil 2 was announced than it was between when Duke Nukem Forever was announced and it came out?
That's wild.
Isn't that crazy? That doesn't seem possible, right?
Because that was such a big story, like the pre-orders, and I still have my receipt and this, that, and the other. Yeah, that is.
And it took over the title as the longest, Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Yeah.
If we ever see that game, who knows? It'd be vaporware. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack. Go ahead.
No. I think it's a worthy tangent. Bayonetta 3 is a platinum action game. And this is a review in progress because I have not rolled credits on Bayonetta 3. I'm a big fan of the franchise, so, you know, expect that to remain. My goodness, this game starts the way only Bayonetta games can. Like, they're so out there in, like, the weirdest. So few big AAA games do what these games do, where it's like grotesque demons and angels and intense action that has you doing the very platinum game, you know, punch, kick, range, dodge. If you time your dodge right, you get to slow down to then chain it into something else, and very fluid, kind of Devil May Cry-ish if you haven't played other platinum games. But then also it's set to like the most relaxed jazz music. And you're like this witch who shows her butt all the time, and the side characters are all very eccentric and like purposefully annoying at times, and other, it's just like such a cast of characters that have remained part of this franchise and have become endearing in a way that you're just like, yeah, of course we're going to see them again. Bring, you know, it wouldn't be Bayonetta without, you know, X, Y, or Z. And my goodness, is it an interesting time for me to have been playing Bayonetta 3 as we got to do our preview of God of War last week, Jeff, to play God of War Ragnarok and then watch the opening cutscene for Bayonetta 3 that is like a kindergarten drew a video game, you know? It's just like, my eyes, this doesn't... I mean, the cutscenes, particularly on Earth, like regular people, there's no other way. It looks bad. I mean, it just, it looks bad, but I'm being accepting of it for Bayonetta because that game has existed outside of a platform for so long. It feels like, oh yeah, this is Bayonetta 3. Just like I'm getting Super Mario Brothers 3. You know, like the graphics are the same. How cute. They've chosen that old PS3 art style.
Right.
And it is the first game that I've played. I guess Pokemon Legends was the first, but this is another game that shows the Switch is underpowered. Like, sure. It really, yeah, struggles. In the action, I haven't had any times where I feel like I wasn't able to pull off a move because of stutter or frame rate problems, but
That's why it's weird that this has become a Nintendo franchise, right? Is because it's trying for something that isn't, yes, that doesn't play to the strengths of the platform, right?
Yes, 100%.
Like, you Mario games and Zelda games and all those, you know, they art direction means it doesn't matter that they're on the Switch, right? It's just a phenomenal experience, and you're in this cartoony world, and it's fine. But Bayonetta is trying for something very, very different from that, and it feels like it is under supported by the platform upon which it is on, you know, whatever.
Yes, definitely. But when you are fighting, I do think the demons and that stuff has great art direction. It does, you know, you buy into that world and the combat becomes what you focus on, and it's super, yeah, super fun. I really love it. I'm having a blast with Bayonetta 3. Aussie Jedi in chat asks, and I'll touch on this briefly, there's been controversy around the voice acting character, the women, the original woman who voiced Bayonetta in 1 and 2, and now the new woman who voices Bayonetta in Bayonetta 3. And there's been some controversy about the original actor claiming she was offered X amount of money, and then there was reporting from Bloomberg that said she's actually misrepresenting it. It was actually this much money. And then the original actor who called for a boycott then said, donate to charity. And one of the charities she recommended is, I would use the word charity tongue, yeah, in cheek. They are a likely hate group. I truly don't think that story is that interesting. I also don't think it's worth ruining anyone's enjoyment of the game. I think from what I've read, the studios made the right decision based on the information they had. And sometimes characters need to be replaced, not because one of them is Superman, but because one of them is Lex Luthor, perhaps. But yes, you can read about that. I will tell you that for me personally, that does not detract my enjoyment from the game. I do think that voice actors are often woefully underpaid. I think the way the original voice actor brought this up was dishonest. And she has some views that do not align with mine personally. But as a video game podcast, that often, you know, we stick our toes in that stuff from time to time. Listeners will know. I think Bayonetta 3 is a fantastic game, and one that I will be talking about more soon. And if you have played any of the others, it is a trip. No one does it like Platinum, and no one does it like Bayonetta, in my opinion. It's real good. It's real good.
There you go. And yet your playlist is not finished. What else have you been playing?
No, I'll do one quick and then we have one together. The one I'll do quickly is, I was given a code for Gotham Knights on PC. We talk about on this show a lot how much I love a lot of ray tracing and all that fancy stuff. And Gotham Knights was shown to have even prettier, fancier, more beautiful ray tracing on PC. And for 2 days, it was unplayable on PC. We had people reaching out to us sharing that. I was not alone in that. I think it was DRM that was put in and taken out and put back in again, and the game just would not launch on Steam, which is a real bummer for folks, especially.
You had to text yourself in order to play it.
You couldn't play it. It was unexecutable. You could not play it. That has ended.
Really good DRM.
I don't. Yes.
Say yes, what you will, but ain't nobody copying that stuff. You know what I'm saying?
No, you cannot. And I played a lot less on PC than I did on PlayStation 5. And I think the thing that bums me out is that I have a 3080, RTX 3080. It is not appreciably better on PC. Dare I say, in the moments I played, it was arguably worse. It suffers from the dreaded Unreal shader compiling stutters that other games have worked around, but Gotham Knights in its current version does not. A lot of frame rate stutter that then if you go back and replay it, it's smooth, but that's not how you're playing this game. You know, you're not like, I will play that Harley mission again. And it's still, even with a beefy GPU, I turned on a beefy GP for my back patties or my bappy patties.
We gotta start using beefy GPs, dude.
Beefy.
NVIDIA just announced a whole bunch of new beefy GPs.
Get some buns with sesame seeds on it, and some barbecue sauce coming out.
Those GPs be beefy, baby.
You got to see it with ray trace on these beefy GPs. Put your old GP in the trash. Get that beefy GP.
Get
buddy.
That beefy GP. You.
We were baby talking. I love it. It's hilarious.
All right, refocus. I got it.
This has been a weird episode for me. No. My brain is in a weird place. Blame it on snapped. Halloween.
I can get through this.
Okay.
You have a wig even on. With that, it seems. Oh gosh, what's the other thing? No, I can see it's PPG, not your GPU, your other, the other thing, the
CPU,
Intel, your beefy CPs. It seems CPU throttled in a way that even with a beefy CP, it struggles. And so my biggest advice for anyone interested in Gotham Knights, if you listen to last week, you're like, I think I'm still going to try it. If you're on PC, wait for a patch. It is,
or maybe just skip this game because it's not great.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
Great game.
I couldn't
brute force. Hurts my soul. I really want to play this game.
I couldn't brute force.
Too many great games out right now to be not playing great games. Yeah. Sorry.
So that's Gotham Knights on PC. And then we have a PC game in common, Jeff.
Yeah, Sony reached out with codes for Sackboy: A Big Adventure on PC. You know, Sony continues their first party ports to PC, which I say two thumbs up, Sony. Keep doing that. Good stuff. I've enjoyed a number of the ports, mostly because I got that super ultrawide monitor. And I like
a Supi OP?
Yeah. I don't even know. I can't even parse that one. You know, I played the Uncharted Thieves Legacy in Super Ultrawide. Played that God of War, played the first Horizon game. Yeah. Booted up that Sackboy: A Big Adventure PC. Get excited to do a little Sackboy platforming in Super Ultrawide. It doesn't support Super Ultrawide, Christian.
But do you know what it does support? All the rays. All the rays are traced.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. There's little black bars on either side of my massive screen. That's all I care about. It doesn't support the resolution. It bummed me out. It really bummed me out.
Did you
also
play this?
It was real jittery for me. In the cutscenes, it was real jittery for me. And I got a beefy PC. You know, I got beefy GPs. I got beefy GPs, beefy CPs. There's so much beef in my on my desk. I can't even. It's rancid, frankly.
It's just a slaughterhouse.
Just raw beef everywhere.
A butcher's block. No, it was really smooth for me. I first turned on all, I maxed everything out.
Yes,
and I wasn't hitting a consistent 60. So I turned a few of the rays down. And my GPU was, hitting 100% as I turned everything on. And I turned a few things down, and then I was cruising, you know, at like 90 up to 120. Everything was super smooth for me. And this is a game that I missed initially as like a PS5. It came to PS4 as well, but like a PS5 launch window game.
Yeah.
Everybody told us that we would enjoy it, and I never got to it.
It's good.
It's great.
It's really what I want out of Little Big Planet, which is just give me a really fun platformer game. You know,
like, yeah.
I appreciate the tool set. I really, really do. I'm not going to use it. You know, I ain't got that kind of time. But make some awesome platforming levels, which they did here, and it's great. It's great.
And the jump is great. It's not like that awkward Sackboy jump. It's awesome. It's really, really good.
Yeah, it's quite good. But I prefer playing it on PS5 personally to the PC version.
Oh, that's interesting, because you'd have a regular widescreen TV and you have to look at black bars.
Exactly. Yes.
I also played it on my Steam Deck, Mario.
And there you go.
Jeff, to your point of playing big game on Steam Deck.
This feels like a good Steam Deck game. Yeah.
I put it on medium, you know, medium presets across the board, 40 frames per second, locked the screen refresh at 40, and I am cruising at a rock solid 40 frames per second. So like on PC, I have all the rays and it's great. And then I find myself playing it most of the time on medium on my couch next to my PC.
I don't know what was going on with me. I was dropping frames all over the place on my beefy PC. I don't understand it.
Honestly, Christian, though, everyone talks about these 30 frames, these 60 frames, 45 frames ain't bad. 45 frames. For most of my games on the Steam Deck,
45 nice. Frames. Yeah.
40 frames is real nice, especially when you have that variable refresh rate. It looks real good.
Real good. This is a game I really want to play because I'm a huge fan of the Rayman Legend games.
Mm.
And this has a lot of that energy, but just in a obviously different scope. Especially with, like, I think someone in the chat mentioned, like, the music levels. I'm very excited to experience that. I haven't got a chance to play this. It wasn't going to be the game that I'm going to run out and play at the launch of the PS5. But now that it's available on PC and on the go, hey, I might even give this a shot.
Yeah, I feel like it was one of those things where when they launched, they're like, we got to have a platformer. Let's have a platformer at launch of this new console.
Every great console has a platformer, right?
Which
Crash Bandicoot.
It's great.
Fantastic game.
That's cool. But I feel like it kind of just got it. Unfortunately, because it just sort of filled a slot, it felt like a lot of people overlooked the game. And it was much better than just the, like, you know, required platformer of a launch, you know, launch window. It's actually really good.
I think it's really good. I think it's one of those games that's great with kids. And I think, as we talked about with Astrobot, had this been a Mario game, I think it would have been, much higher praise in terms of what they're doing. Some of the creativity and some of the later levels is really, really fun.
Yeah, I agree. But also, that's part of the problem, is that it launched with that Astrobot game also on PS5 at launch, which is far superior in every way, in my opinion.
So good.
My opinion.
So good.
It is real good.
I mean, Sackboy Big Adventure is pretty fun, but that Astro Boy game, but all the Astro Boy games are
chef's kiss.
Yeah. All right. As promised, I've been playing a lot of stuff. I mean, next week we can talk about God of War more, right? Next week or the week after, Christian? I think it's next week.
Thursday.
I'm not going to say one way or the other, because I don't know if we can say when we can say.
Well, I just did. anyway. And I've been playing lots more Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope, although my son, he has gotten farther than me in Sparks of Hope without my help, and it's very frustrating because he's got the Switch all the time. He was really sick this week, and he stayed home from school, and so his mom let him play Switch, and of course he got on my Sparks of Hope. He's got his own profile, so it's not using my save game, but he got farther than me. That's not acceptable. We can't get farther than Dad. Come on.
Well, that's your, he's your hope. He's your spark of hope. You know,
he's my spark of annoyance.
If you want, though, get him started early on XCOM and then see how it really feels.
This is called hardcore mode, son. Enjoy.
Son, you can name all your people, your friends.
Yeah. Give me the
what happens.
I named it after your mom and sister and me and all your favorite pets. Don't let him die.
But the best part is he'd come back the next day and be like, I didn't.
Yeah, I know.
I won.
It's the truth. He'd be like, Daddy, I did it.
I'm the president now.
he asked me if I've seen stuff in the game. I'm like, no, I haven't gotten that far. Don't spoil it for me. Anyway, but I mentioned last week I wanted to talk about some indie games that I've been playing as well, because there's all these massive AAA games coming out right now, and we want to talk about those. I want to talk about some indie games, like this one called Marvel Snap. playing a lot of. No, I'm just kidding. I have been playing a lot of that. But one of the games that I've been playing lately is a game called Of Blades and Tales, T-A-I-L-S, Of Blades and Tales. This is a game that just came out of Early Access, I believe, and it's been in Early Access for a long time. I wasn't aware of it, but I got a code for it and checked it out. And oh my goodness, is it right up my alley insofar as it really reminds me. It's kind of a retro look and feel, turn-based world. It's a massive role-playing game, all turn-based, which means every time you move, you're taking a turn, and the world is moving also. Very much reminds me of the games that I fell in love with as a kid, namely the Ultima series, like Ultima 5 and 6. Ultima 7, my favorite game of all time. Ultima like 5 and 6 is really much more what this feels like, although what if, you know, done today. It is, you know, pixel graphics. The universe is interesting. It's set in a world where everyone is anthropomorphized animals. You play like a sort of a fox looking dude. You are moving around this big map and discovering things and going places. And it's got, you know, it's got a bit of modern day sort of post Souls influence to it, in the sense that you can wander into places you're wildly unprepared for and die and all that stuff. It's got save anywhere, which is great. And my biggest gripe is that the combat feels a little simplistic. I may be early enough in the game that things are going to open up and be more fun, but I wish the combat felt a little, you know, we talked a lot last week on the show about the feel of things, the feel of games. And Christian and Alex are doing feeling this right now on the Patreon. So feel is very much a big part of what we talk about here on the shows lately. And you know, like a game like Cult of the Lamb has such good every time you swing a sword, it feels good. You know, God of War has really nailed that. You remember from the 2018 everything feels good. And I wish that Of Blades and Tales felt a little better than it does. But what it does deliver that really takes me back and makes me feel nostalgic and makes me keep playing it is this notion that around the next bend, who knows what you're going to find. And the game has a lot of really cool sense of discovery and this, you know, just top-down 2D world that just feels like a map come to life. You know, just like those old Ultima games for me. Made me really enjoy my time with it. It's called Of Blades and Tales. I did put it on Steam Deck because it's like 157 megs of, you know.
That's awesome.
Of game, which is great. I was like, I'll just pop this on the Steam Deck and play it. It's not great on Steam Deck. It is really a game you want to play with, or at least I want to play with a mouse. It's a game I want to play with a mouse. I want to click around on the screen and do stuff. And I do not care for the Steam Deck's like thumb mouse trackpad thing. Not my thing.
It's inconsistent.
Not my favorite.
I gotta start fiddling with it because it's either really good or really terrible.
Yeah, no in between. It's just not doesn't feel good to me to like
are
move
you
a cursor
that
around.
Of Blades and Tales is as big of a game as Call of Duty is on disc. Is that what you're
the same 70 megabytes on the PS5 evidently on your Blu-ray disc. We didn't get to that story, but that's fascinating to me. The other indie game that I got to play, well, several others, but one of the others that I got to play, I purchased because I was so excited about this game, which I don't need to be buying games right now. It's just so there's so much stuff to play. But Warhammer 40K Shootaz Blood and Teeth just came out. And this game is just ridiculously fun. It's just ridiculously fun and addictive. There is a demo I encourage you to try. The demo is what got me to buy it. I ponied up the $20 or whatever it was to buy this game. This is 2D side-scrolling shooter along the lines of Metal Slug, right? This is Metal Slug on steroids, basically, is what it is. It's Metal Slug on 11. You play as a Warhammer 40K orc. Now, if you're not familiar with the Warhammer 40K universe, orcs are a little similar to an orc you might know from a Tolkien or a you know, generalized fantasy world. Orcs are big and dumb and aggressive. But in Warhammer 40K, they also have machine guns and chainsaws and a lot of arsenal, you know, a big arsenal of weaponry. And so you're one of these guys, you don't care about anything. You just want to kill everything that comes on the screen. And it's just a massive old school kind of arcade game done with fantastic graphics. It does support Super Ultra Eye, which is great. And it's got a wonderful sense of chaos, just nonstop. You get all kinds of cool weapons. It's got a kind of RPG elements where you're upgrading things and getting new stuff and getting new. But it's just like pure arcadey fun, jumping to platforms, blowing things up, shooting all over the place, getting cool weapons. It's great. It's great. If you like those old games like Metal Slug, or I guess Contra is another example of something even farther back, this delivers that. And it does it with so much, I think, style and humor. It really is goofy. It's goofy in the best possible way. I'm having a blast with it. Warhammer 40K, Shootas, S-H-O-O-T-A-S, Shootas, Blood and Teeth. Really good fun. And then the last game I'll mention really briefly is a game called Hell Is Others, which is not a game that has clicked with me very much, but is a game that I think is pretty interesting and unique. It's PvP and PvE mixed together at the same time. It's pixel-based. Very hard game to describe in a lot of ways because it's a mashup of kind of two very disparate styles. There are story elements and sections of the game that you play in this almost like a point-and-click adventure game, like an old LucasArts game, like, Maniac Mansion or you know, Secret of Monkey Island or something, where the characters are really big on the screen. You're moving in a 2D world. You're interacting with items on the screen. You're picking things up, moving them around, putting them in places to get more story elements. And then you go out into this world, this fantasy world, this post-apocalyptic kind of crazy wasteland world where everything is out to kill you. And then it turns into a top-down shooter where you are, you can only see where you're pointing your perception. So as soon as you turn away from something, there could be a monster coming behind you. You wouldn't know it, even though it's, you know, top down view for the player. And it's very harsh, very, you know, it's a survival game. You're trying to get resources. You're trying to get enough bullets to get all the nasty things that are coming at you. You die a lot. Blood is a resource for everybody. It's very dark. It's very gothic. It's, very much, it's called Hell Is Others. What did you expect? But it's, you know, very timely for this part of the year where we're in spoopy season. It has not clicked with me just because of how oppressive and harsh it is. It's not a game I'm enjoying spending time in, but worth mentioning because it's so different and so interesting. Hell Is Others, it's what it's called. You might want to check it out on Steam or I've been playing it on Steam just to see if the style grabs you, because if you are into sort of darker games or you want something in this part of the year where it's a little creepy crawly and it's doing something really different, it's called Hell Is Others, and I was impressed with it even though it didn't really grab me. All right.
I was gonna say, it looked a little Hotline Miami. It's like, yes, I like the idea of that. Yeah. Of like point and click is one part of it instead of just like cutscenes, and then the other part is action or something like that. And I think that view mechanic is interesting as well. Because again, yeah, it's not Fog of War per se, because you can see geometry of the level of Hell Is Others, but just not the enemies.
And I think that's a fascinating way. You don't know if it's there or not. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like an Alan Wake approach to a top-down game. Like, how do you handle Fog of War in a top-down game? And I think that aspect of it seems interesting. The resource managing seems less interesting to me because Hotline Miami is not that.
Right. no, you're cool right. Concept. That is the reference, Hotline Miami, of course. And I think this game is another example of things that I've been talking about a lot in the indie space lately, which is this wonderful thing of taking two genres that don't really go together and putting the peanut butter and the chocolate together. It's really interesting. Cult of the Lamb, I've been bringing up a lot tonight. But it just seems like over and over and over, we're seeing that Dome Keeper is another one. We've been talking about a lot of these indie games where it's like, it's this game sometimes and it's this game other times, and somehow they're both working at the same time together. And I think that's another example. You know, Hell Is Others is another example of that. And I think it's a really cool trend in the indie space. Really cool trend. But that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks for listening. Hey, we do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Mario Rivera, thank you so much for being here. It's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. Obviously, fan from way back. Love talking to you guys. Thank you so much. I think this is my third appearance on the show. And I haven't really appeared many times on other places, so it's a great honor to honestly be with you guys. So thank you so very much for inviting little old me.
Well, it's great to have
you to get your Steam Deck. We knew that you didn't. You were like, if he gets it before they're widely available, I guess he can be back. But we,
that's all it takes.
A strict Steam Deck requirement for that.
And post Heritage Month as well, Spanish Heritage Month. So thank you for that as well.
Oh, yeah, of course. Where can folks keep up with you and the things that you do online?
Yes, you can keep up with me over actually at the YouTube channel Point in Progress, where we do a bunch of different shows, namely our main title show, Point in Progress Podcast, as well as a show that I personally, it's my baby, MC University, where we actually, instead of talking about all the latest Marvel movies that everyone's very excited about, we're going back and we talk about the old ones. And we're on season two. We're in the past the 2010s. So we're talking like Days of Future Past, The Amazing Spider-Man's, Fantastic Four stick. Like we're in that era. And you know what? There's some good ones and there's some real bad ones.
Yeah.
And so if you're ready for it, definitely check it out with, of course, my co-host over there, Sly Clone MC. But you can also find me back. And I'm happy to say I am back at That Mario Rivera on Twitter. I was recently in a Taylor Swift jail within the last couple of years, thanks to Universal Music Group. But now I'm back. So please follow me over there at That Mario Rivera. Very much
just in time to be in Elon jail. You're back.
Oh, God, I'm scared. Very scared.
Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, on Friday, the next episode of this first season of Feeling This is going to come out, where Alex Solman and I discuss NBA Jam and why that game feels so good to play and holds up. And it's a really fun discussion looking back on what it was and what it is today and what games are. So that will be available to all patrons on the feed, patreon.com/DLCpod, dropping on Friday. And then my newsletter that you can my newsletter, Let's Chat Games, that you can subscribe to for free at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. I finished a draft. October was a tough month. I finished a draft. I want to go over it a few times, but it will be coming out very soon, I think, once I put the polish on it. And it is about the evolution of games. It was inspired by the idea of this game came out this long, kind of what you talked about with Beyond Good and Evil and Duke Nukem Forever. Like this time has passed, or Bayonetta being announced to when it came out, and what growing up with games has been like, something that we've talked about a little bit on this show. But that is the focus of this next newsletter. So that's tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. And if you are listening to this right now, I'm not on Twitter much. I'm on Instagram even less. But this year's Halloween costume will be posted on both of those places. I am at Spicer on Twitter. And I think I'm Christian_Spicer on Instagram. I think I only log into Instagram every Halloween to post the picture. But those will be up Halloween midday, I think, is when we do those pictures.
That's exciting. Can't wait to see what it is and how it'll work in this blonde wig that you're wearing right now.
It's so underwhelming, Jeff. It's I'm a podcast host. So
aging podcast host.
Oh, come on. Cut me deep, my friend.
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. Other shows I do include The Film Cast, which is about movies and TV shows. We Have Concerns, which is a comedy science show where you can learn something and laugh along the way. The Fan Controlled Show, whose name changes every single week because fans control it, which you can find on YouTube, on Spotify, anyway, your podcast, or twitch.tv/fancontrolledsports. And that's it. We love hearing from you here. Again, dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you contact us here at the show. But let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Mario, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I pondered this entire show. I think I wrote something down and I immediately deleted it because I want to know if I wanted to be risky with it or if I wanted to just go like a something I know that I think is really great. And you know what? I'm going to go with something really great because I'm not feeling risky.
Okay. So we can do both.
There is a movie. Mm. It is Halloween season.
Ooh.
I do recommend that there are people that are in the mood that love both Halloween, but also maybe a little bit James Cameron. And so I recommend a little indie movie called The Guest.
Mm.
The Guest is set during Halloween. It is Halloween themed in a lot of ways. The best way I would describe the movie is very much in combination of it's Halloween, the John Carpenter movie, mixed with Terminator.
Whoa.
And that's how I describe it. It's about a man who goes to this family's home, tells them that he actually served in the military with their son who has passed recently. And, you know, basically they take him in. They, you know, sort of he becomes sort of a company person in their household. However, he is a total stranger and there's a lot more to him than meets the eye.
Hmm.
And from there, it just so happens to be set during Halloween and it's got that spooky mood. It has an amazing soundtrack. It is directed by Adam Wingard, who moved on to do the Godzilla versus King Kong film. I really would love for him to go back to doing some of the early horror stuff that he's done, like You're Next. But this movie, it's a vibe. It is a John Carpenter mixed with James Cameron vibe that I think mixed well with that chocolate and peanut butter that we were talking about earlier. That this is that. And I think that it stars Dan Stevens,
yeah.
Lance Reddick, and Michaela Monroe, who's a fantastic actress. And if you've not checked this out, I will say I want a sequel and I want it to be the Terminator 2 of the sequels.
Mm.
But they actually did, I think on April Fool's, I think last year during the pandemic, they did a sequel album that you could listen to.
Wow.
That is a concept of what a Guest 2 would look like.
Amazing.
And it's probably never going to happen because that movie didn't make a lot of money, but it's a gem that I think people have to see and experience.
Great recommendation. I think Guest. We covered this on the Filmcast back in 2014. I remember
seeing
it.
And I think you liked it.
I think I liked it. I think I did like it. I love a Dan Stevens. I love a Dan Stevens.
Oh, my God. Yeah. My man crush right there.
Yeah, he's great. That is The Guest. And it is a film. Do you know where it's streaming by any chance?
Currently, not a lot of places, sadly. But I do recommend Blind Buy, Blind Rent.
There you go.
Definitely check it out. Stream the soundtrack. Do everything we can to get a sequel. That's
love
all
it.
I have to say.
Very cool. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
One that is very much in that theme, as if you're listening to this maybe on Halloween or post-Halloween, but spoopy season isn't over until Treehouse of Horrors, right? Mm. The Simpsons has taught us that. We have several extra weeks, so no matter when you're listening to this, Barbarian is another great, scary film out now for rental, streaming. It took theaters by storm earlier this year. And I think the less you know about it, probably the better. I went in pretty dang cold, but it is a horror movie. And I will say, you know, not the mind freak. There's like that suspense horror. And then there's like something going to kill you horror. Yeah. There's a Chris Angel, seeing him walk by you in Vegas late at night. And you're like, ugh. And then there's like going to his show where it's like, ah, you know, it's different. Different Chris Angels, but it is Barbarian. It's fantastic and well worth the watch. And then this is a pre because it comes out before we do our next show. But Alpha Zulu, which is Phoenix's new album, drops on the 4th. You might know Phoenix, Wolfgang Amadeus is probably their maybe most known album in Listomania. But
Listomania!
Alpha Zulu, mm-hmm. That, you got it. You nailed it.
Yeah.
Keep going. Keep going.
The menu.
There you go. Great. Perfect. We nailed it.
Oh, there Alpha you go. DMC Strike.
It comes out on the 4th and it's real good.
Oh, I'm excited for that album. That sounds really cool. And second the recommendation of Barbarian. It's quite good. Pairs nicely with a Filmcast episode we did about it. You're so inclined. My parting gift. I'm just going to say it. Vote, please. Please vote.
Steam Deck to the polls.
That's right.
Steam Deck to the polls.
Bring your Steam Deck to the polls if you need to stand in line. There's a lot of people that are going to try to make it so that it's inconvenient and it will take a long time for you to vote. F those people and vote anyway. If you're not registered to vote, I think you can probably, there's a lot of states where you still can register to vote this week. You can do a provisional ballot in a lot of states. It's super easy. Vote. It matters. It matters. Just do it. I know there's a lot of people who are like, it doesn't matter. It does actually matter. Vote. Vote. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of stuff that you're going to discover on your ballot that's actually really interesting. Did you know that in Colorado, where I live now, legalization of psychedelic drugs is on the ballot? Yeah. Fascinating stuff, man. Check that out. You get to decide. There's a lot of neat stuff if you vote. You're not just voting for a different flavor of Despicable Human. You're actually participating in the world and your community in very significant ways. Please vote. Just, I don't know, care a little. A little. A little. Like one day every other year. You know? That's all it takes. All right. That's my pitch to vote. Iwillvote.com. Not a bad place to go. We got a listener-suggested parting gift. In fact, this came from two different listeners, and I really should have mentioned it earlier, but I'm mentioning it now because it's our spoopy episode. It's our Halloween episode. And so this came in from both Andrew and Rob, who sent this into dlcfeedback@gmail.com. But they participate in the Discord, our Discord, 5x5 DLC on Discord. Andrew wrote, want to recommend a forum thread bracket in the Discord as the parting gift. And if the word October conjures the rustling of leaves, long shadows, and a nice evening being scared out of your skin, come join the DLC Discord and delineate loathsome cinema as we rank user-suggested horror favorites in the Best Horror Film 2022 Edition Forum. It's a Discord tradition. We're running a horror-filled bracket as an excuse to poke fun at each other and our completely terrible opinions on which fright-filled film should move on to the next round. Join us if you dare! Andrew says, shout out to David for running the bracket. So this has been going on all of Spooktober. And again, I should have mentioned it earlier, but it's a cool thing, and it will probably open you up to a bunch of wonderful horror movies if you're not already aware of them. So check it out. Go to our Discord, participate, and even just kind of see what's been going on. And there's a lot of really cool stuff going on. There's the monthly game that everybody plays and talks about. It's a really great community. Christian and I have almost zero to do with any of the coolest stuff that happens there. We hang out, we contribute, I try to post, I'm certainly reading a lot, but these amazing people are organizing and doing cool stuff like this all the time. So check it out. Check it out. And thank you to both of you for sending this in, and thanks to all the folks in the Discord for participating. All right. That's it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Mario Rivera and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Thanks to our theme song composers, White Cube, which is Jason Sherry, and T. Ryan Arnold. Thanks to each and every one of you who listened to the show. We are grateful. We appreciate you. In particular, we are so grateful to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod for making this show possible, for supporting us. Our top tier patrons, the hype train level patrons on the Patreon, they get their names shouted out at the end of every episode. And I'm going to do that right now. That's right. It's time to thank those hype train patrons by name. Patrons like Hyperboy66, Sure You Can, Comedian Aaron Trahan, David F., Michael S., Relentless Rex, Curtis from Louisville, John Cisco, Matt Valdez, Andy Joyce, Kyle Starr, Riley Knox, Rob Rickman, Anthony Goulas, Dan Flanagan, Sasan, Adam Denby, Hank Patton, Victor Valenzuela, Jonathan Talbert, Matt Bradley, Chris Zacharias, Jeff Luxack, Mitchell Ness, Jonathan Putney, Will with 1L Harris. Jimmy Radcliffe, Mark Gowland, Malcolm King, Dan Palmino, Ben, Jenny, Nate, Stu Goss, Kevin Brazel, Scott Hughes, Zachary White, Jonathan Spiceman, Forever Schlepfer, Soren Silk, Yick, Albert of the Stuff and Junk Show podcast, Mike Lombardo, Travis, Spiceman Silencer, Michael Buck, Jackson, Michael Stadler, Peter Olberg, Josh Peak, Jad, Nick Strauss-Klein, Taylor Wiggert, Christian Bravery, Octavian Ratsiu, and Jason Novak. Thank you, all of you. We appreciate your support. All right. That's it for this episode. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
And have a happy Halloween.